Okay, so if you're here last week, we started looking into 1 Corinthians 13. So if you guys want to turn there, I thought we'd read through it one more time. And what we've been doing is we've been examining when we think about loving one another, and more specifically when we think about loving our spouse, what does that mean? What does it mean to love your spouse? And so we get some clear direction in 1 Corinthians. Ladies' Bible study has wrapped up. They are wrapping up, or they did wrap up 1 Corinthians, I think. So it's fresh, kind of fresh there, somewhat. And just to remember the context, Paul is writing to this Corinthian church that is experiencing lots of turmoil, lots of conflict, lots of problems. In chapter 12, he talks about how you're all one body. You're all part of the same body. And he ends by saying, I'll show you a more excellent way. And so having somebody that will volunteer want to read there verses 4 through 7. 1 Corinthians should be in your handout. In the Bible. I know, it's an easy way to participate. You just got to read, just follow the words. Go, Lauren.
Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things.
Awesome. Yeah, great. And so we see there's some positives, right? It is this, it is this, it is this, and then there's some negatives. And so I think last time we went through and we talked about how it was patient and kind. We looked at examples of what those words meant. And I think we got to, it does not envy. Mm-hmm. And there's only one in there. Okay, envy. And I think we're on boast.
Yep.
That's where we left off. Does not boast. And so there's a note here, right? Jealousy or envy is wanting what someone else has. But what we're talking about here is bragging or boasting to make others jealous of what we have or what you have. So Paul's using this verb that depicts a person as a braggart or a windbag. They parade their embellished rhetoric. So it's often it's not even true. They're exaggerating and embellishing, and they're wanting to gain recognition. It's marked by egotism, subservience towards their superiors, and a condescension towards their subordinates. So, you know, I think there's a question here. Why do we brag, or what's kind of behind the attitude that of someone who's bragging? Or where do you see that in the church or in a marriage? Why do we do it?
I think sometimes it's insecurity.
Yeah, can be display that we're insecure about something, so we're over adjusting, overcompensating. Mm-hmm. Any other reasons why people, you think they tend to brag, or other people, of course?
I think that most people humble brag.
Humble brag, yeah. So, like, what would be an example of that? I'm trying to think of a good example.
God has really blessed me. Oh, by the way, I got $1.7 million from my apartment building. When I thought it was only worth $7 million.
Yeah. He is so good to have made my life so amazing.
Yeah.
And to have given me all these gifts to make me what a great person that I am.
I'm the dumbest person in my class at Harvard.
Yeah. I can barely make the payments on my Maserati. But God has provided.
Yes. So humbled.
Humble
grateful. Hashtag grateful.
They're trying to get both at the same time, right? Made me the humblest man. What do you think we tend to brag about? I mean, we talked about some of the, like, possessions.
I think social media, Instagram, Facebook. Like, you don't need to say 1,000 words to brag. You just post a picture of you on a beach.
Yeah.
Hashtag blessed.
Blessed.
Blessed. Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
It with a filter.
Right. Know? The one out of 50.
Beautiful skin and a beautiful backdrop, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I saw, Chris and I saw this documentary of this family that they started a blog, and it started out fairly innocent, you know, oh, this is parenting, parenting. And by the end, it was like, there's all these outtakes, and she's like, and then it goes, hey, shut up, you know, just brutally attacking the kids. Like, be happy, come on. And then, oh, just back to the, so like all the focus is on making it look, making it appear,
mm-hmm.
right? The appearance of, and do you think, I mean, what do you think, is bragging, does it usually truthful, or does it, do we tend to brag on the truth, or what do you think?
I think there's always an undercurrent of truth.
Yeah, you're trying to focus on.
And you don't want to brag about something that can be proven false.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But to at least look feasible.
Exaggerated.
I don't know why my mom is laughing at me.
You're so insightful, son.
We raised them well.
Yes.
Hashtag bless.
Excellent.
I think our generation likes to brag about all the things that are negative about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have depression.
Yeah.
Mm. And I'm actually, and somebody else is like, well, I'm on depression too. Yeah, well, I'm on medication for it, so.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a sense in which the greatest amount of suffering, right, earns you points. Type of thing. So you're bragging that I'm the greatest victim of all victims. So that is kind of an unusual, but we do see that, because like if you're the more of the victim, then you're not, you're someone that should be honored and lifted up as enduring the suffering.
In ministry, in pastoring or in missions, you can brag about like numbers.
Uh-huh.
You can also brag about how much you're suffering in a similar way. So you have these missionary updates, and like whoever tells the saddest story about how rough it is, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have a working toilet. Well, we don't have toilet paper.
Yeah.
She's banana leaves.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is, I find that, like how you mentioned that, it seems that no matter what your circumstances are, you can like color it in a way that you can brag about it.
Yeah.
You can color it in a way, so, as, you know, same. I think that's true. So what is it about bragging that makes it, because he says that love is not bragging. So why can bragging not be loving? They're at odds with one another. If you're bragging, you're not loving. If you're loving, you're not bragging. So why? What's the?
Because you're usually looking down on the other person when you're bragging. You're putting
yourself
above them.
Okay, whereas love.
Above yourself.
Yeah, that's the other way around. Yeah, it's true.
And their needs. Their needs above yours.
Right, right. When you're bragging, look at me. And there's really not even attention or mention or thought of other people's needs or situations.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're talking about the tax burden of being in the upper 25 percentile,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're bragging, but what about the person in the lower 25 percentile? I mean, you comfort them and say, well, you know, just be thankful you don't have to pay taxes and you don't have enough money to do it. I
very
mean,
comforting.
There's kind of a, it almost incites people to jealousy,
mm-hmm.
where you want people to envy you and you're kind of asking them to envy you, and it's a, you're creating temptation for them.
Mm-hmm. You're kind of trying to highlight that I have more. You have less in whatever area that is.
Don't you want to be mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so sorry you've been going through a hard time with your spouse. Me and my spouse, we never fight.
Yeah.
I bet, you know, I hope that you have a great marriage like I do.
Yeah. So, this one, I mean, it's kind of tied to the next one, I think. So, love does not boast, and it's not arrogant. Uses two different words here, so there's got to be some different. So it's not arrogant. And maybe kind of Krista's comment, right, links into that. So I'll have some people volunteer. 1 Corinthians 4:19. Come on, this is your easy. You got that one. 1 Corinthians 8:1. Yes, come on. Chris has got that one, and then Colossians 2:18. You got it. Okay, go ahead.
But I will come to you soon, if the Lord wills, and I will find out, not the talk of these arrogant people, but their power.
Okay. And then Krista?
Now concerning food offered to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge puffs up, but love builds up.
Okay.
Let no one disqualify you, insisting on
Asceticism,
and worship of angels, going on in detail about visions, puffed up without reason by his sensuous mind.
Yeah. So what, you don't actually see the word arrogant in all of them. What's the, what do we see instead?
Puffed up.
Right? Puffed up. Stung by a bee. They're all puffed up. Swollen. Right? So, and then when you look at that, so let me make this a little picture. What are we getting at? That arrogant people. Like boastful, we're talking about the action. Right? This is what they do, but what's arrogant talk about?
It seems to be connected with knowledge.
Mm-hmm. There's a connection with knowledge, right? Feeling that. Right? In that Corinthians passage, he's saying that all of us possess knowledge, which likely could have been something that the church was saying, but he's saying that this knowledge can make you be puffed up.
Yeah, arrogance seems to be the internal heart. Mm-hmm. Thing. Boastful is kind of the overflow. If they're arrogant, how do we know? Well, they boast.
Yeah, it could be that this arrogant, this could be more of an internal attitude that shows itself kind of an external behavior. What else do you get? Anything else from those three passages about like what's going on with arrogance?
First Corinthians 8, where it's kind of in contrast to love builds up.
Mm-hmm.
So it would imply that arrogance tears down.
Yeah, and it goes back to, I think, too, the puffing up is a focus on self, where building up is a focus on others.
It's interesting. So, it's weird fact knowledge. Turkeys, during mating season, will puff up this massive big thing, right? And then
right.
They'll bash into each other. And so it's the entire point is to assert dominance.
The puffing up.
And then inevitably, by the virtue of trying to do that and show each other who's who, they are both going to suffer.
Okay.
And so arrogance is incompatible with love, not just from your angle, but from engaging with anybody. The arrogance from both sides, even if it doesn't seem like there's arrogance, is going to cause there to be deep disconnects in the relationship.
Two puffed up people are going to have a hard time loving one another. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a quote here talking about the opposite. So William Carey, father of modern missions, right? He says that he was responsible for translating parts of the Bible into no fewer than 34 different languages and dialects. And he'd been raised in a simple home in England. In his early manhood, he worked as a cobbler. In India, he was often ridiculed for his low birth and former occupation. At the dinner party, a snob said, "I understand, Mr. Carey, that you once worked as a shoemaker." "Oh no, your lordship," Carey replied. "I was not a shoemaker, only a shoe repairman." Right, just, I'm not worthy of the title of shoemaker. So, when you think about that, we've talked about kind of what we boast. Is there any difference in like a marriage, for example, where what does it look like different to be a husband and wife that's maybe boasting, but maybe someone that's arrogant or has that underlying? How might that show itself? What does that look like?
Definitely in the way they talk, which is kind of what you were saying already, but I was just looking at 1 Corinthians 4:19. There's a real contrast there with like how Paul is saying he's going to come to them, because he very much is like, if the Lord wills, right? Like there's almost humility in Paul's comment there, that it's like this is what I'm planning to do if the Lord will allow me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like when you're prideful, arrogant, there's very little sometimes, I think, reliance on God and acknowledgement that that you can have plans, but and you can talk about things, and you can talk about the things that are good about you, but like there's no acknowledgement that the Lord gave you those things, or that the Lord is the one providing, right? And will only provide if He allows. And so I think definitely there would be evidence in the talk, you know, the reliance on self, and what you're saying is a lot about self, and you don't probably hear too much of God if there's too much of a prideful attitude.
Yeah, so let's talk about that more. So like in a conversation or in conflict, possibly, how could a husband and wife, what are some things that maybe we might say that would kind of illustrate maybe there's some underlying arrogance? When you look at Colossians, that passage, just a couple verses before, he's encouraging, let no one pass judgment on you in regard to questions of food or drink. These are a shadow. Let no one disqualify you, insisting on asceticism worship. So there's this sense in which these arrogant people were judging, you know, determining what, judging and disqualifying people based on their standards rather than God's standards. So what kind of conversation would show that maybe we have arrogance?
I think in a disagreement, if you assume that you have all, let's say Joshua and I are having a fight.
All right.
We're doing it.
Literally never
puffed up.
Don't listen to her.
And I think if my focus is getting my point across, making sure he understands what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking and why I'm right, I think that's the arrogance piece. And instead of first trying to understand what is he thinking and what is he feeling and why does he think he's right. So I think like real practical, it's like assuming that I could be wrong and making sure I'm listening to him.
Yeah.
I'm understanding him and not insisting on being understood.
Right.
I mean, I'm gonna give it a go.
Yeah.
But after I listen.
Give him a chance.
I think the conversation involves a lot of put downs. Like if you're in a disagreement, you are really not regarding kind of what Naomi's saying. You have no regard for what your partner says. You're just you're wrong, I'm right, and the conversation is very much a put down for the other person.
Yeah, they oftentimes it can seem condescending or belittling, because the arrogant attitude assumes that they know more or better in this disagreement, and that they just need to explain it to help this person understand where they're wrong, the error of their ways. And so there's definitely that difference in how to view yourself and your own. And I think Naomi talked about, right, there's, to put that off, right, there's kind of that need, we have to admit at least the possibility, right, that we could be wrong or off in one way. And so I think you also hit on, instead of talking down, belittling, condescending, what are some attitudes or actions you should have, like in a conversation, to display humility versus where you're going to put off arrogance? I know one for me is, it's, if you ever have the self conversation, like you have a conflict with someone, and then you just rehearse, okay, I said this, and then they're going to say this, and I say this, right? So for me, it's helpful to like just stop and say, let's just pretend that you don't know exactly what they are going to say, and just stop and just before you think about what you're going to say, just come in and just really ask a lot of questions to make sure you really are here, like, or say, maybe I'm not understanding. This is what I think you're saying. Is that what you're saying? So there's a certain amount of questioning that you can do.
Yeah, I think one manifestation of pride, I'll get to the humility part, is just self-righteousness. Like, don't you know that I'm the godlier one in this relationship? And I think the humble disposition is, instead of thinking about the, you know, in my case, you know, her sins and how she's falling short, having a greater understanding that I don't know her sin like I know my sin. you know, I'm the most sinful person that I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know my thoughts. I know how far I've fallen short of the glory. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like this, I'm not a righteous man.
Mm-hmm.
And having that attitude.
Yeah.
In that discussion, instead of thinking about her sin, think about more of mine, kind being
of
in touch with mine. Yeah.
Almost like going back to the unmerciful servant parable. It's like,
yeah,
to treat her correctly, you need to be familiar with your own fallenness.
Yeah, plank versus speck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can imagine another conflict of a married couple is each thinking that their role is more important than the other person's role. So if you have a stay-at-home wife,
mm-hmm.
and the husband says, you know, I've been out working 50 hours, she says, well, I've been taking care of the kids for
100 right.
hours. And so the sense of each one, not the humility comes in the honoring the other person's role and not
mm-hmm.
thinking that your role is more important. It actually kind of destroys the interdependence that allows love to function
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah, and it... like, it prevents you from really valuing... by, you know, the higher view of yourself, then it's by default you have to have a lower view of the other spouse or whatever they do. So.
Scott, I would add if there ever is a need for some sort of confrontation in an argument like this, you don't ever confront motives; you confront actions,
mm-hmm.
speech. Like, I think it's arrogant to assume why somebody is doing what they are doing,
mm-hmm.
as if
mm-hmm.
you don't read their heart.
Mm-hmm.
So in the event that confrontation were to need to happen, then I think just being really careful that we're not going after why we think somebody is doing what they're doing, and more of just, hey, there seems to be an issue that I'm noticing what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm thinking the longer you're married that you can read your spouse's mind, then it doesn't happen. So, because we do make those assumptions, I know exactly what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just keep going with it. When we really don't, and even in the asking questions, you can be really arrogant in your questioning. And you have to be careful that it is a desire to learn more about
mm-hmm.
them and not just espousing more of your knowledge or
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever you've decided you know more about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is hard because then like that's so true, but it does present a conundrum because
yeah.
sometimes you want your mind to be read. So then you can also be mad because you know, but we've known each other this long. You should know me by now. Why don't you know me any better than that? Right? And then there's that boastful attitude that, well, you're so dumb you don't know me. As well as you should, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
can go the opposite way too.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds impossible.
Yes. sometimes I say, okay, I think this is what you're thinking. But I just want to make sure, you know, but I think I know what this is. Right? So just giving you showing forth the effort. I'm trying. I'm reading.
So in our marriage, one of us is better with words than the other.
I don't know. Okay, it's hard to tell.
Just kidding, it's Joshua. And I actually, this really, really, really practically, it has been, there was a shift at some point in our marriage in which love looked like he actually gave me space to try to get the words out.
Because mm-hmm.
he could get them out so fast.
Yes.
And they sounded real good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, and.
They call it mansplaining.
and so I really like love, and I can pinpoint, like, this
mm-hmm.
is love in our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
When Joshua actually takes the time to, he gives me time to actually. To like say the same thing like five or six different times
mm-hmm.
in five or six different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So to try to explain myself.
That's
just like this real
right.
That's what it's looked like
mm-hmm.
for us. And I think usually in a marriage there is someone who's better with words than the other person.
Yeah, and it does kind of accentuate that like you know, arrogance we're talking about and boasting, sometimes you have wonderful gifts and wonderful skills, and that's just something that's true. And so it's like, how do I use and, you know, be thankful for this gift, but not, you know, over dominate or whatever in a conversation, or like be thankful for that and give space. So that's a great example.
And I think the way the word is said makes a lot of difference too, because you can say the exact same words. It's not necessarily the words that are said, but the way that they're said.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I mean, we've had to sometimes been like, okay, let me try that again. Let me start over. Let me say it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we were saying the same thing, it was just the way that it was said.
Yeah. Why did you do that? Why did you do that? That's a little different tone. So.
Well, the other way to completely shut down one of those conversations is to say, you don't know what you're talking about.
Ooh.
So again, it is a conversation stopper.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're trying to understand, and then the arrogant response is, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Mm.
Or you don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
So we're just not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So.
I agree. Yeah, that's really good. So love is not, it's not boasting, and it's not arrogant. And so see if this one is how it's related. So then we have love is not rude. It's not rude. And some other uses here. If you look at 1 Corinthians 7:36, the context there, Paul is talking about those who are married and not married, whether they should get married. He says, if anyone thinks that he is not behaving properly toward his betrothed, if his passions are strong and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let him marry. It is no sin. So the not behaving properly is kind of this rudeness. And so it's not really clear there that it's talking about rudeness, but in one commentator says that Paul has in mind unbecoming, improper, inappropriate behavior in this situation. And it indicates that the conduct isn't in harmony with the established norm of decency. What's decent? So I guess, I mean, we all kind of have a feeling for what, how's rude, but like, how is it different maybe than boasting, arrogant? What's kind of a rude, good definition, or how do you know when you're acting in a rude way?
Disrespectful.
Yeah, lack, no respect.
So, rude can look very different contexts, different cultures.
Yeah.
And so maybe love means I'll take the time to figure out what's rude.
What is rude in this situation?
Mm-hmm. So, for example, I'll say last night, some of our kids went to prom,
mm-hmm.
and then some of the parents were there,
mm-hmm.
and everyone left. Everyone left so quickly, it was like, boom, there's gone. In Mexico or Spain, that would have been super rude. Like, really, really rude. Say,
mm-hmm.
we're gone. But here, it's normal. You say,
mm-hmm.
whoop, and you stand up, right?
Yep.
And then you leave.
Well.
It is. In other places, that would be super unloving and really rude. So it's caring enough about the people around you to understand in this situation,
mm-hmm.
in this church, in this family,
mm-hmm.
in this country, what does it look like to not be rude?
Yeah.
To act appropriately. So it's not as black and white.
Yeah.
And it takes some effort.
It definitely does. And I think, when you think about marriage, I think one big connection to this is you see it a lot of times when you're interacting, say, with in-laws, is because each family
yeah.
has its own set of rules, right, of what's how to act. And when you violate those, you might not know that, right? You have to pay attention to figure out what those rules are. What might be not rude in your house is a big, big offense. You know, in another house.
I'd probably say a lack of consideration.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're, especially if it's something like respecting other people's time,
mm-hmm.
right? That can look differently in each country.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, if you're not taking the time to recognize you know, this person said the party was at 6, so I need to show up at 6. Or somebody asked everybody who was going to come to make clear that they were going to come, and people don't say things, or they don't make clear that they're going to come. Stuff like that is just, I think, comes down to basic human consideration. How do we make life easier for one another? How do we make life simpler for one another?
Mm-hmm.
And so at the very foundation, it's if I'm failing to just engage in basic communication,
mm-hmm.
even outside of cultural norms,
mm-hmm.
Although, you know, it can be included within cultural norms, but I would say a lack of basic consideration for somebody and in within communication itself.
Okay. Let's, I mean, this is about other couples, of course, but what are some rude things that husbands and wives, maybe you can help inform another couple in here that, oh, I saw this is rude. What are some things that husbands and wives can do that can be rude or interpreted as rude?
Interrupt the other when they're talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
For which I'm the guilty one.
The interrupter.
I am the interrupter.
We've had an ongoing, so Floyd, one of his ways to decompress after work was to come home and put his headphones on and watch an hour of news. So I am the opposite. He would walk in and I want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So we have gone back and forth on this. He's like, just give me a little time. And I'm talking, and he'll just walk in, sit down in his chair, and put on his headphones. And so we've really had to work through, I need this little bit of time, you need this little time. So in my eyes, that was rude.
Yeah.
In his eyes, he just needed that time to just, he'd been talking to people all day, he needed this time. So I had to respect that mm-hmm. he needed it, and mm-hmm. so there has been a compromise.
Yeah.
You're
that's a very real thing. I mean, Carissa can attest that when we first had Addison, you know, she stayed home with her and went from, you know, being out working to having zero conversation. I was at school talking nonstop,
mm-hmm.
and we had almost identical conversations. Like, I just need a couple minutes when I get home. And we talked about, how long should we wait before we start talking? You know, and where our picture was like, I've used all my words and I'm on empty. And she's got all hers ready to use. And so there's definitely a way that you can be rude if you don't work out what that's going to look like. What other ways can we, what are things that we can do that can be rude to our husbands or our wives?
I'm going to say personal hygiene.
Yeah.
If you smell, do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's brush your teeth, take a shower, do what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
but just
mm-hmm.
be aware that your odor is unpleasant.
It is, and other people, smell it. Smell you. I think just the way that you appreciate or denigrate the work of your spouse. So a husband can easily, you know, why is the house dirty? This something about supper, the kids, you know, this ridicule or criticize. Wife, you know, working, how come you haven't done this? Fix the house, earn this much money, we need this, we need that. So there's a lot of opportunity that can rudely just be dismissive or unappreciative of the work and the efforts that your spouse is making.
One thing that I think is rude that's not necessarily for people that are married, can be, for just in general, is not being present in a conversation, like being distracted by a phone or a screen or something, and like maybe kind of carrying on a conversation, but you're not really there.
Yeah. Yep. I'm trying to understand the new generation where that's like, it just seems the norm to wear an earbud,
mm-hmm.
which means I only halfway might want to listen to you.
I don't want to, but if I have to, I'll
have this one. Right. Yeah. Every day, it doesn't matter how many I have to tell. Okay, remember, come in the class. Take out. But that's totally It's true. Something I'm guilty of. If I'm messaging or doing something on my phone, right, you get withdrawn from it.
And phones have really done that. That was kind of the last straw with me and students.
Mm-hmm.
When I would have PT students in my clinic. And my rule was the phone was sat by your computer, and then we went and saw patients. And it was like an obsession. And they would constantly be, mm-hmm. and then they would sneak their phones in their pockets.
No.
And pull it out in the patient's.
Can't believe it.
I got a text message. I have to look. And it just was an absolute, it was just, and that was what I wrote up every single time.
Mm-hmm.
The phones have got to stay away. They cannot be in your interactions. So,
yeah.
And it was not something I had ever encountered because we just didn't have them.
Mm-hmm.
I had never had that issue. So.
I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong here.
I'm withholding my.
Yeah, I got another rude husband thing.
Oh, okay.
Yes, more confessions.
This is the time. This is a safe place for you.
Yeah, and she's out of town. Leaving a mess.
Oh, yeah.
Because that just kind of implies.
Yeah. Messy know, kitchen.
I just left it. Yeah.
Just left it.
The cleaning care just comes and takes care of it every time.
Yeah.
I think kind of on the other end, we think it's rude when somebody has a hard conversation with them when it's actually a loving thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes we can misidentify something as being rude, right? Where it can be loving to have a difficult conversation. Mm-hmm. That's true. So a lot of it is kind of goes back to what Tanner was saying. Like there's some motivation behind it. The underlying, like, are you just being selfish here? What's behind the action? Are you actually loving me, seeking to serve me? So that has a lot to do with it. The underlying attitude.
I was just going to say, it's not only how you treat them, but it's how you talk about them to other people. That's a big one, too. It's easy to talk more kindly to their mm-hmm. face.
Yes. I was thinking about that one in the sense that, like, in this definition, it talks about not in harmony with the established norm of decency. Well, oftentimes when it's talking about your spouse, the established norms, say within the church, or the of not being rude, kind of conflict. Like where a lot of times where I see the established norm of society is that many people type they complain about their spouse. It's like a pastime. At least I'm familiar with that in the workplace. It happens quite often. It's just like a way of people use humor. So it's not always. Rude to violate the social norm if mm-hmm. there happens to be pockets where it's just that's the way people are interacting. So, but definitely that's a way that we can be rude is, you know, insulting or belittling or joking about our spouse, for sure. So what could we put on instead of being rude? I mean, what would be a good word, an attitude or an action? The opposite.
Caring, possibly.
Caring.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, going back to what Joshua said about like thinking through. I was thinking maybe considerate,
mm-hmm.
where you really just trying to evaluate what's the right way in this setting scenario to show appreciation, to show love, to show care to people. Because if it's a different country, if it's a different family. It's just a new workplace. What's rude or what's not rude? You know, do I take my shoes off when I come into their house or do I leave them on? You know, just really basic things. And kind of pay attention to what everybody else is doing in that scenario. Okay, let's maybe hit one more. Love does not insist on its own way. Wow. Yeah, so there's a repeated scenario that comes up in the Marshall home. There's a vacation, there's a break, there's an evening, we're all home. What are we going to do? Let's play a game, right? And then what game are we going to play? Well, there's usually five choices or more, 10 different choices. And I'll tell you, this we've used this, we've talked about this verse so many times because there's that tendency, we're going to play this or we're not, I'm not going to play, right? It's like, it's my way or the highway type of thing. But so we've tried to say, well, I don't know if that's the most loving to insist that it has to be your way. So what are some ways that husbands and wives, maybe some different decisions, different preferences where husbands and wives can insist on their own way?
I think in the role of just head and submission, that it's, I think guys are probably a lot of times can be guilty of pushing on something to make it a submission kind of aspect, mm-hmm. when it really shouldn't be necessarily, and it's mm-hmm. kind of insisting mm-hmm. on their own idea, even though it's not in the realm of like mm-hmm. leadership, I have to make this decision kind of thing.
Yeah. And they can also err on the other side where they force all the responsibility onto their spouse and say, whatever you want to do, honey, you know. So it's a tough.
How to bring up the kids.
Parenting, yeah. What do they eat? When do they go to bed? How do they, where are they going to go to school? I think we talked about in one of our lessons about how we can have a conflict if one of them wants them to homeschool, one wants to do, or they want to go to Christian school, or they want to go to public school. So that can be an area where you can just say, it needs to be this way.
This is almost like the other side of rudeness. Like rudeness is not being considerate of another person's preferences or mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. And this is that the other person insisting on their own way. So almost like all the examples that we gave before, if you flip that, the other person who's on the receiving end of rudeness could also sin by insisting that.
Okay, yeah. So if they have a difference of opinion, one of the spouse can be, you're saying one of them can be rude in that they don't even consider their spouse's preference or choice, and then the other spouse can just dig in and double down on that and insist, no, it has to be this way, and they're both sinning.
I think rudeness can also come from a place of not knowing the other's preference, mm-hmm. Such as when we were talking about, you know, maybe you just don't know the cultural aspects mm-hmm. of things. Whereas insisting on your own way, it comes from you're aware of what like the appropriate thing is, but you're choosing not to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or you're demanding that they know, that everyone knows this is your way, instead of just allowing them.
I mean, like practical small. I mean, I don't know, small stuff. I guess is just like you always pick the movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch that. We're not watching that.
You always pick the movie. You always have to pick where we go to eat or some preference issues. There's some verses here, John 5:30, giving us kind of the positive. I can do nothing on my own. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And so the will of Christ is brought underneath the will of the Father. So he's not seeking a separate will from the Father, but his will is aligned. And then the negative example in Philippians 2, they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. So this area that we've been talking about really connects to Philippians 2. Let's go ahead and turn to Philippians 2. I'll read a little bit more of that context. We'll kind of wrap up this. So, you know, the heading in there, not scriptural, but it talks about Christ's example of humility and then lights in the world and Timothy and Epaphroditus. So he's encouraging the church at Philippi. He's giving them commands on how they're to live and encouraging them what they're doing well. And he holds up Christ as an example. And so we think about these ideas of boasting, being arrogant, being rude, insisting on your own way versus having humility, caring, and being considerate. We have a great example in the letter to the Philippians. So Anybody want to read, starting in chapter 2, let's maybe look at 1 through 11, big passage here. 1 through 11, you can do it.
I can do it.
All right, go for it.
If then there is any encouragement in Christ, if any consolation of love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, any affection and mercy, make my joy complete by thinking the same way, having the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility consider others as more important than yourselves. Everyone should look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Adopt the same attitude as that of Christ Jesus, who, existing in the form of God, did not consider equality with God as something to be exploited. Instead, he emptied himself by assuming the form of a servant, taking on the likeness of humanity. And when he had come as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even to death on a cross. For this reason, God highly exalted him and gave him the name that is above every name, so that the name of Jesus every knee will bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father.
Yeah, so that's the backdrop and the example that we have. And if you look there in verse 2, we're to have that same love, right? We have that same love where we empty ourselves, we lower ourselves, where all of these, there's this self-raising up, this self-exaltation, right? We're seeking to lift ourselves up, lower others. So I think that's a good thing to, throughout the week, what good way to think about, how do I love in this way? It's a great picture, thinking about Christ. He didn't hold on to what was rightly his, right? He emptied himself, took on this lower form, put himself under the will of the Father, put up the needs of others. So we'll pick up with not being irritable next week. Do not be irritated.
Yes.
When I ask questions. Let me pray for us. Father, I thank you for the example of Christ and how in all things we can look to him and can look to your word as you explain and show and demonstrate, not just in your teaching and preaching, but in your life, what true love is, what it looks like. I pray that you'd help us to walk in that love and help us to put off these negative attributes and to put on the positive ones, that we might be husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, Christians in the body that love one another. And that by that love, others in the world would know that we are yours. We ask this in your name. Amen.